How deep is your love? Hello! Welcome one, welcome all. This is How Deep Is Your Love. What is it, Nathan?
How deep is your love?
And what is love?
Food.
And what is food?
Love.
And what is love food? We don't know that. We're going to work that one out. We'll work that one out. So listen, this is the first, I'm very excited, of my weekly podcast. So welcome to the world of How Deep Is Your Love, which is all about food, family, community, coming together, eating, and love, as Nathan said, rather unconvincingly, to himself, I think, more than to anyone else. But then if you knew Nathan, you'd realise that love is very important to him, and he's not prepared to throw the word around willy-nilly. Although he did spend some time in Tokyo with a man called Willy, which is a true story. I'll tell you another time. Now, here's the challenge for me. I'm going to be doing a weekly podcast for you. Each podcast is going to be subject-based. And as we grow together in this great odyssey, this great adventure, this great journey through food, we can come back and revisit certain subjects because we will both have learned some more. But the challenge for me in the first podcast was to find something to talk about that really covered so many bases in Punjabi and Indian culture. And I thought about it long and I thought about it hard. I wanted to be inclusive. I wanted to be something that appeals to all different followers and fans. And you are the sweetest people. And you're very much respected for that. And I came up with this notion, Nathan. Do you know what the notion is, Nathan?
What's the notion?
Chickpeas. His wee face, look at those dimples. You could fit 3 or 4. That's what we're going to do. Later, we're going to be doing the chickpea dimple challenge. See how many chickpeas, different brands, different sizes, can fit in to those crater-like dimples of divinity. And I don't mean that in the studying of religions. I mean divine. Anyway, chickpeas. Why have I picked chickpeas? Well, I think it's something even the most occasional visitor to the world of Indian food knows about chickpeas. They may not know they know about them, but they know about them. So, for example, your onion bhaji, it's made with gram flour. Gram flour is such a significant flour in India. Maida, as they call regular flour, is barely used in kind of North Indian houses, apart from breads and things. Gram flour, its uses are remarkable. Because obviously the chickpea is a legume, is it not? Not a pulse. Not a lentil. No, a legume. And so it's the flour created from grinding dried chickpeas is incredibly ubiquitous. So you make a batter for your pakora, for your bhajis. Those pakoras then go into a dish, for example, called curry, where the masala, the sauce, the gravy is also made with gram flour. Chickpeas themselves are used cold on the street. There's an incredible street snack which we'll be featuring down the road. We have to feature because it's one of my mum's favourite things in the world. A thing called pani puri or gol gappe. So it's little discs. Imagine poppadoms, but they've filled with air and they're like little globes, crispy little globes, and you very gently, carefully poke a little hole in them. Put chickpea masala in, some tamarind water, potatoes, eat it, and just the explosion of flavour in your mouth. Oh, Nathan knows what I'm talking about. He's had them before, haven't you? Delicious, aren't they? I might get you some this afternoon. Go to West End. He's a good boy. So chickpeas there. Chickpeas and curry chana masala. That's a great thing, you see. I've always felt there are three places on the planet where you can happily be vegetarian or vegan, right? The Middle East, and in particular Israel, because in Tel Aviv there's a massive vegan thing, and I wrote a big piece for High Life, the BA in-flight magazine, about it. You get handed three menus in Tel Aviv. You get the regular, the vegetarian, the vegan menu. India, because there are so many vegetarians in the Hindu faith and the Sikh faith, and also a lot of vegans, perfect place. Punjab is probably the worst place to be a vegan because there's milk everywhere. But other parts of India, very easy to be vegan. And I think a very, very good place to be a vegetarian, surprisingly, but give me a moment, is Italy. Because what more do you need than beautifully cooked pasta, some tomatoes, some cheese? Not so good for the vegans, but hey. Love you nonetheless. So chickpeas really do feature in every strata of life in North India and across the subcontinent. You will also have... Oh, no, I will talk quite a lot about my belief that Punjabi food is the best food on the planet. Obviously, I'm going to think that. I love all sorts of other foods. And actually, testament to that is, while I've been posting in the last few weeks and months on Facebook, people have been asking for recipes. And I don't just cook Punjabi food and Indian food. I cook food from all over the world. So we're actually launching a book called Around the World in 80 Plates. I don't even see what I've done there. It's a quite clever little thing I've done there. Yeah, Nathan likes it. It's the food that I cook that isn't from the subcontinent of India. Because I just adore it. I just adore food. But the best food in the world is Punjabi food. Now, within that subcategorization, there is Muslim Punjabi food, which is by far and away the best form of Punjabi food. Even the local seagulls agree. And who can fault them? They know where to get a cheap, well, actually a free meal. Thieving bastards. Now, the reason why, and again, it's really interesting, just to get slightly serious and political for a moment, because you know me, I'm going to. This is what I found most pernicious about the mainstream media, global media's coverage of Muslims. It bears no resemblance to the Muslims I grew up with. Muslims I grew up with love to party, love to eat, love to drink, love to have a good time, and that's all reflected in their food. You know, what the Mughals and the Muslims gave Northwest India and the rest of India was just luxury level food, yeah? So dried nuts, dried fruit, which in those days were really, really expensive. You know when you've seen gold tapped out, hammered out really, really thinly on top of food? The Muslims gave us that, you know, as well as giving us the number zero, architecture, and excellent dancing at weddings. So, Muslim Punjabi food, because they're party people, they do great things like murg chana, chickpeas and chicken curry. And there's something about... I'll talk on the... So listen, we're running a beginner's class into kind of those of you who love eating Indian food but perhaps haven't been prepared sort of psychologically in a sense to start cooking it or just haven't felt the confidence. So we're going to walk you through, hold your hand and take you through the early stages. And one thing you're going to hear me talk about in those beginners classes and in some of the other classes is the five stages. And you find the five stages of flavor then translate into five stages of taste. And there's no greater example than chana, murg chana. So chicken and chickpea curry. The place that does the best version for me is a place called Lahore Kebab House in Umberston Street in Whitechapel, London, right? Just the best people. Just the best people. The best food. It started as a tiny wee shop. And then the dad acquired the next door. Before you know it, he's got the whole block. And the place is... You can get a table now. Well, you can. Just need to pick your times. And the beauty of this is, imagine just breaking off a lovely bit of naan bread, that lovely kind of pillowy softness, and scooping up a bit of chicken and masala. And as you scoop that up, you crush, gently crush under your forefinger and your thumb, the great joy of interposability. You crush a few chickpeas, and in your mouth, you just get those five flavours, that softness of the bread. You get the kind of the wide comfort of that, the chickpeas. You get the soft deliciousness of the chicken. You get the masala, and then you get the whole flavor which binds it all together. It's a joyous experience. But the recipe we're going to be... Now, here's the other thing I need to explain to you. This is how the podcasts work. In the podcast, I'm going to talk about a subject, but talk you through roughly a recipe. This recipe, which we're talking about today, will then become available in the cook-along on the Friday night. So if you are interested and you want to, and you feel inspired and ignited by, in this instance, chickpeas, I don't know who isn't, it's a different sort of igniting that can happen if you're at university and you eat chickpeas, but that we discuss in the you student cookbook. I'm quite good at this, aren't I? So yeah. So the recipe we're gonna do on Friday in the cook along. So book your places, the three slots. We'll keep the numbers quite tight so it can remain conversational and intimate. It's chana masala. Because I think when I teach you a recipe, when I share a recipe with you, on the face of it, you're thinking, that's one recipe. That's the beginning of your journey, yeah? Because ideally for me, what makes this fulfilling for me is that you get back in touch and tell me what you've done with that recipe, how you've made that yours, Trevor. Hmm? Catherine, how you've made that your recipe. Janelle, there's always a Janelle. Tell me what you've done with it. Because the great thing about chickpea masala, chana masala, is it cries out for your involvement in the kitchen. Now, we're going to have a slight aside. Forgive me, I'm going to be saying this quite a lot over the next few months and years to you. The most important person when it comes to your food isn't your guests. Controversial, Hardeep. I know, Hardeep. Why are you talking to yourself, Hardeep? Have you removed the fourth wall? There is no fourth wall. It's the wireless. The most important person is you. You have to love that food, right? And take it to the table. Because if you don't love it, you're going to be second-guessing someone else all the way through. Yeah? So, you do what you want to do. So let me give you a for instance. When we do the pop-ups down at an amazing place called Hop Yard, in a place called Forest Row, which is truly magical. It's the only place outside of Scotland I would think of settling for the rest of my life. True story. We do a beautiful pop-up, beautiful craft beer bar and community hub. To call it a pub undersells it massively. It's central to the community. Great characters, great people come there. Lovely friends have made through the last few years doing a pop-up there. So the way we structure a restaurant menu, or indeed a pop-up menu, even more crucially, is when you've got 2 weeks, your flow of food is really important, because I want to keep my prices down. I want my food to be affordable, and I also don't want to waste food, particularly when, you know, there are people in my own country, kids in my own country going a bit hungry. I want to make sure all the food is eaten. So designing a menu in that regard is really crucial. So what we do on a Monday, for example, when we're doing the prep, we'll do a chickpea masala. Delicious. You know, you got your cumin. Cumin for me, we're doing a whole episode on cumin, so I will bore you about cumin. Add length, add nauseam, add infinitum, add on whatever Latin phrase you want. That was quite like that one too. So you got your cumin, tempering the oil. You've got your cumin powder, which is very different from cumin. Again, we'll talk about that. And for those of you that are interested in the spice trail, have a look at the different tiers. If you're a real lover of spice, we're doing a monthly spice trail class, which I love doing. I've done all over the UK and actually a couple of other places as well. In Brooklyn once, which was great, with beer. Really good. So you got that. You got your cumin, coriander, chili. You got your aromatics, your onions, ginger. God, I think ginger and chickpeas really work together. There's something about that. The heat of the ginger, you know, it's an indirect heat. It's a subtle heat. You know, the way, you know, Gary, that thing they have in, so pickled ginger, they have one in sushi restaurants. That is spicy, but because it's so sweet, it kind of masks that broad spice underneath. So you've got all that going on, chilies, cooks down, tomatoes, chickpeas, love a tomato, and who can blame them? Oh, I've just had an idea there for a recipe. Beef tomato, roast beef tomato filled with chana masala. Fancy. So you've got that going on, so we cook that's cooked on the Monday, that will go on the menu Monday night, and that does really well because it's substantial enough to appeal to the meat eaters. It's delicious enough for the vegetarians, and it's vegan. You don't need any dairy in there. You know, dairy quite often in my cooking, because here's what's interesting about my cooking is I come from a tradition of Punjabi cooks, but I learned to cook in the West. So I learned to cook at the feet of Angela Hartnett, Sat Baines, Heston, folk like that, Jamie. So for me, it's about bringing the Western styles and traditions and techniques into Indian food. And in the West, we use butter to take things up to another level. It really emboldens, enrichifies is a new word I've just created that I think works really well for this podcast. So we do that. But with chana masala, you don't need to, because there's enough going on. The comfort, that flouriness of the chickpea, it's all there. So that's what we'd have on the Monday night. Monday lunchtime, we'd mix it with the chicken. So you got your murg masala, murg chana masala, which is delicious. We've spoken about that. But then you'd also keep some of the chickpeas and you blitz it and you do Punjabi hummus. Now that was Kathleen's idea. You're going to hear a lot about Kathleen. My Kathleen, she is my, when we do the pop-ups, she runs front of house, or she'll actually work in the kitchen with me. She's one of the few people I can work with in a kitchen commercially, and I love them more at the end of the shift than the beginning. That happens never. She's a one-off. So she, rather than chuck a load of chickpeas away, because remember, I don't want to serve the same dish all week long. I want people to come back and try something new. But on the other hand, I don't want to be, I don't want to be chucking stuff away. So we blitzed it. We blitzed it with some tahini. And man, it really worked. Fresh cumin powder just to dress it with naan bread. I mean, that's delicious starter. And kids really liked it as well, because as you add the tahini, you mellow the whole thing out, And it was just delicious. And I've just realised when I do that again, I'm going to souse some red onions. Sousing, is that an English term? Do they have that in English? So, or is it a Scottish? I don't know. Anyway, sousing. No, souse pickle. Pickled, souse herrings. Finely sliced red onion in a white vinegar with some capers, I think might be really interesting with this. And maybe a tiny little bit of black pepper. Rocks, doesn't it? Rocks. And a touch of sugar. Just take the edge off the onions. But the way to do that is to sugar your onions first and leave them for 10 minutes. That takes that bitter flavour away. Because I think people don't know. We're going to do a whole podcast on onions as well, by the way. Oh my God. Onion curry. Does such a thing exist? Well, it will do when I get my hands on it. So, yes. That's what you do. That's how I love the utilitarian nature of chickpeas. I love how they appeal to everyone. And you can do some amazing things with them. And then also, chana bhatura is a classic street food dish. It's almost impossible to find a North Indian street food vendor that doesn't have something chickpea going on. So chana bhatura is a deep fried, pillowy soft, but deep fried as opposed to a naan, which is tandoor cooked. Slightly oily, hot, delicious bread with, gosh. If you've never had chickpea curry, then in many ways you haven't lived, Come live with me. That's what I'm saying. So, that's our first cook-along on Friday. We're going to do chana masala. And again, remember, you get it right. You got to get it right for you, okay? If you cook, and here's the thing that's really important to me, the cook-alongs are going to be great fun. Because I think the one thing we all learned in lockdown is how much we miss people. Some of us don't miss people, and that's fine. That's what Zoom was made for. But if at the end of that hour of cook-along and what you've cooked is exactly the same as mine, then I failed you. What it needs to be is it needs to be your take on it. I will show you. I will give you the route map. You take, you take the journey, okay? Bear in mind, I'll always be there with you because I love you in a strange way. I do. So that's what we're doing on Friday. But this whole week is dedicated to chickpeas. So TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, Patreon. Find out what level you want to sign up for. There's lots of things going on. I'll go talk about them all in more detail as we unfold. But we'll be doing a lovely chickpea. I think we might do a wee chickpea salad for the warm weather. We just catch the end of summer. There's a lovely little thing. It's a great starter for the pop-ups. It's a chana salad. And the great thing about that is store cupboard ingredients. If they just sit in the cupboard, they do nothing. Right, they just remain as good as they are. you get last minute visitors, you know, you got a couple of drinks on the go, you make this lovely tamarindy, spicy, limey, delicious, crunchy, spicy salad. So, questions. Lovely listeners, we have four questions. Nathan says four. Question one, Nathan, what is it?
Question number one is from Jenny, and she's asked...
Hello, Jenny.
What's the difference between dried and canned chickpeas?
Well, this is a fascinating question. Canned chickpeas come in cans, and dried ones are dried. No, this is actually genuinely interesting. When I was growing up, there were no pre-cooked chickpeas. You didn't get them. Or actually, you might have got them, but they were really expensive ones in the Italian shop. And they were big ones. You know, the big fat chickpeas. Kind of like the Marlon Brando of chickpeas. You know what I'm saying? So, you got those, but they were like way too expensive. They would barely feed one person in the family. And the dried chickpeas, the great advantage of dried chickpeas is that they are smaller when they're dried, take up less space, they keep longer because it's the liquid, the water part of most veg and legumes and the rest that causes dehydration, deforestation, makes them go shite, okay, makes them go bad. It's the water part. So they're a lot more robust and long lasting. The thing about, obviously, the dried chickpeas is there was a big health scare, you know, when I was a boy, Nathan, long before you were born. There was a big scare about not soaking your legumes sufficiently overnight. Kidney beans particularly, there were some deaths associated with kidney beans that hadn't been properly soaked, then boiled. You meant to soak and boil vigorously was the word they loved to use. It was the only time I ever saw the word vigorously used in my childhood was describing the treatment of kidney beans and or chickpeas and black-eyed peas, which is another oft underrated thing. What did you do? Don't mime it on a podcast, Nathan. Don't mime it. What did you do there? You went
boom boom boom. Gotta get that.
Why did you do that?
Because of the black-eyed peas.
Right. Okay. Fucking idiot. You see what I have to put up with here for you. So, I did a bit of research into the dried methodology because we were cooking at a pop-up down in Sussex and it was difficult. It was difficult to get wholesale chickpeas and it was becoming not cost-effective to buy them in a supermarket. Also schlepping them around the place. So we did the dried chickpeas on a couple of occasions and Kathleen had noticed that the introduction of a tablespoon of bicarb. Now, bear in mind, we're talking catering amounts here, so if you don't do it at home, probably a teaspoon or half a teaspoon of bicarb. Have a little look online at what it advises. But what the bicarb does, bicarb now sort of is magic. Do you know that? Absolute magic. It when the chickpeas rehydrate, they are less wrinkly and they're fuller in texture and the structural integrity, if you like, is more pronounced, if you will. So that's a little tip worth bearing in mind. And also, just look at the vigorous boiling. It's difficult to give an indication on the amount of boiling you need to do because different types of water across the UK and areas of France and Italy, as that varies, the amount of boiling varies. I remember my younger brother went to do his PhD, which he never completed. We don't talk about that. He did get a first for maths, so shut up, everyone. He was down in Windsor, Egham. There's a funny story. That was, what college was that? That was King's College, right? And he was, you know, he was a brilliant student. People were falling over themselves offering a PhD because he got first in maths at Glasgow Great University. And he's at King's College, King's Road. He's like, that's going to be cool. Do you know what I imagine? Like the women in the clothes and all the rest of it. Unfortunately, the campus he got sent to was Windsor, Egham, where it was just men and no deodorant. And he came home because he was just bursting into tears on the phone with my mum. It was really sweet. He couldn't get his dal to cook because the water was different down there, and so that he couldn't come up to the boil sufficiently to cook his dal. That's very much the story of his life. He couldn't get his dal to cook. That's what we're going to... I don't talk about his tombstone. So, check out how long you think you should boil your chickpeas for. I have to say, I am all for the convenience of modern life. And for some, especially somebody like me, I come home and if I want to eat, I have to eat. I have to eat the thing I want to eat. Which dieting for me is a nightmare. And as I say that, Nathan, what did you do? Tell the nice ladies and gentlemen what you did there.
I just bit a bit of sweet corn off my sweet corn ribs.
Jesus Christ. I mean, it was the same country apparently, but he's definitely East Coast. And so obviously, if I come home and I want chickpea and chicken curry, I'm not going to get that till tomorrow evening. So there is a convenience about tinned chickpeas, but what I love, absolutely love about the dried chickpeas is they're so much more robust, and you can cook them for longer, ergo they soak up the masala, and the flavour is another level. And also I believe, I only learnt this when I was researching this for you guys, did you know this? Chickpeas actually actively make you lose weight when you eat them. True story. Absolute true story. Something in them that metabolically helps you, lose weight. And I reckon the more they're cooked, the more effective they're going to be at that that aid to digest. But you think about it, see, ancient cultures. Now, here's an interesting thing. If you look at India today, the average weight of an Indian citizen today, it's considerably higher than it was when I was a boy. You know? And also, actually, I don't want to get too serious about this, suicide caused by mental health issues, depression, has increased, almost, astronomically. Now, that's just the socialist in me saying, well, clearly, capitalism isn't the panacea we've been led to believe it is. So everyone was happy when there were tariffs and there was trade controls. But hey, enough about me. What do you think about me? So I think we've answered the question on... Yes? What's the next question? Nathan.
Dave has asked...
All right, Dave.
What is the difference between black and white chickpeas? Or black and brown chickpeas, however you want to.
African-American and brown chickpeas. Now, I don't know if... Did you ever know about black chickpeas? Have you? Have you ever tasted black chickpeas?
No.
Okay. Black chickpeas, and here again, my boy grew up in a Punjabi house. I can't remember the last time my mum made black chickpeas. I have to ask her to make them. Black chickpeas are incredible. They are, so there is a dichotomy, a distinction between what we know to be those kind of yellowy, browny, beigey chickpeas, which are called Kabuli chickpeas. Kabul, I think that's Kabul as in Afghanistan, Middle Eastern chickpeas. So those are the chickpeas you used to make hummus, falafel, and the like, and also in Moroccan stews when you have the chickpeas in the, the couscous, and also in the tagines. So those are the chickpeas. We have them in the north, west of India, all over India now, obviously. But the desi, now desi is a great word, D-E-S-I. Desi means Indian. Indian chickpeas or Bengali chickpeas are smaller, darker, and firmer, much firmer. They you really know. Again, if you want to look at it this way, a slight drawback of tinned Kabuli chickpeas, what we call chickpeas in the West, is that they can mash up and ting, as people who think they know Caribbean patois would say. They are too soft sometimes, and you're getting a flavour, but not always a texture. There is a structural integrity to black chickpeas that there is that nuttiness as well. They are absolutely effing delicious. It's what I've decided my line on black chickpeas is. You sometimes just get the good tomorrow. So for those of you that don't know, we'll probably do a podcast. We'll probably do a podcast about langar. Langar is the Sikh concept of a free meal. Everyone gets a free meal in a Sikh temple. Whenever you can never be turned away from a Sikh temple unless you're under the influence of drugs or alcohol. So anyone in the media business, stay out. That was a joke. So you sometimes get them at temple. Great food at the temple. And with potatoes as well, again with a big flurry of Aris Piper, that the contrast of the soft, delicate flourriness of the potato against the kind of the nutty knobbliness, if you will, of the chickpeas. I will say that I don't think black chickpeas in the chicken curry is necessarily as good a combo as the kabuli chickpea, the regular common garden chickpea. But I do think, if you were doing, heaven forbid, don't tell fellow Sikhs, but if you did like a braised beef curry, braised beef Rogan Josh with black chickpeas. Just give me a second. Are we happy with that? Has that answered sufficiently? Next.
Kirstine.
Hi, Kirstine.
She has asked.
What has she asked?
What can we expect from the cook-along?
The cook-alongs, well, can I tell them we did a pilot?
Mm-hmm.
We did a pilot cook-along, and it was great. I learned a lot. Nathan, I think you learned a lot, although Nathan never admits to learning anything because he feels like he knows it all. Oh, those dimples are back. So basically, it's about an hour or so, and we're doing three different nights of the week. We're doing a vegan-vegetarian Thursday night. Because I feel that's an increasingly important demographic, and particularly with Indian food and the food of the subcontinent, there's absolutely no excuse not to do that. Now, that isn't exclusively for vegetarians and vegans, but I think we all agree, if we can all eat a little bit more vegan, a little bit more vegetarian, it does the planet good, it does ourselves good. So I'm really excited about that. Because again, it's a different range of challenges, and for me as a chef and a food writer, it really makes me stop and think about a different palette of flavours, if you will, and it makes me a better cook when I cook stuff that isn't vegetarian and vegan, is the truth. So there's that on the Thursday night. The Friday night is the kind of the family cook along. That's a real kind of fun thing. That's the main focus of what we're doing. In terms of the week's collateral is about the Friday night. So it's fun. It's instructional. If you buy the ingredients by the end of the hour and 10 minutes or so. So I don't know if I should bore you with this. Originally, we were going to do three slots in one evening. So you could buy, you could sort of buy into the slots that suited you most. But we soon realized that actually that curtails how much time we've got. I can't overrun. And for anyone that's been to see me live, I always overrun because you're so nice to me. So we've decided to spread it over three nights because it was such great fun doing the kind of pilots and stuff with some lovely people. You know who you are, Martin. You know who you are, Caroline. Bruce, you're a troublemaker. Kirsten, I love you. Peter, you're great. So the idea is to cook together. I'm going to cook with you. You can see me cooking. If there's any questions you want to ask, You highlight the hands up icon, your question will be answered. And at the end of an hour or so, we all have a dish to eat. And I just think, actually, the thing I missed most during lockdown was community. It was breaking bread with people. And this, actually, is pretty damn close to perfect when it comes to creating a little bit of community around food. So that's what you've got to expect. Equally, as we get up and running, I mean, obviously, we're building this from nothing. I think we'd be able to do cook-alongs. If people want a specific thing done, I'm more than happy to do it. Because that's what the Sunday night cook-along, as we're now sort of returning to schools and universities and people are going back to work, or not going back to work, but shaping a new life. I always loved that. Sunday night was incredibly important in my mum's house because she worked full-time, as did my dad. So Sunday, she did the cooking for the week. So that's what we're doing on Sunday. We're going to cook a dish and show you how to take that dish and spin it for three or four meals through that week. You know, because if what I'm offering you is the idea of a well-cooked, fresh dish on a Sunday, and we all know curry the next morning when you're hungover is better than it was the night before, I can create new dishes for you through the week so that you've got something to take with you in your lunchbox. Save yourself spending money on overpriced sandwiches and have something delicious but different from Sunday night. You know, that is actually, do you know how me and Kathleen invented Punjabi hummus? Mm-hmm. Was by taking hummus, and we got bored. And the thing is this, you can serve chana masala 3 days in a row and it just gets deeper and tastier and deeper. But as a chef, you get bored. You want to offer new things. So sod it. We'll blitz it. We blitzed it in the RoboCoop food mixer blender thing, and added the tahini, balanced it up. It needs new seasoning, of course, because when you serve something cold, the seasoning levels change, which is why you should never taste anything with a view to re-seasoning when it's cold or when it's hot. Taste it at the temperature you can eat it. Good point. Thank you. Put some roast garlic in, bit of olive oil. It was a light olive oil, and I think upon reflection, I'd use rapeseed oil the next time, because you don't want an olive. The olive flavour with Indian spices doesn't work. But anyway, that used to fly out the kitchen, though, with a wee bit of fresh naan bread. I mean, it also gets your juices going, you know? Sets you up for the next drink and the next something to eat. Oh, happy days.
Right, final question.
Final question. Oh, look, Nathan. Nathan's offering the quiz. He's getting bored. Offer the question before he was asked. What is it? What is it?
Come to natural end.
Thank you.
The final question.
You'll come to a natural end.
Is, what can we expect from the first chapter of your book, Curry 101?
Okay, so the reason I'm doing Curry 101, so I should explain how the books work on the website. So you get a chapter a month. So by the end of the period, you'll have a whole book. And each chapter deals with a different aspect of what you're doing. And originally, I was thinking it'd be good to have a student cookbook. So that's the original thought. But then I realised there's the issues facing students are the issues facing those who love a curry but don't feel confident enough to go out and cook it. And I'll be honest with you, I find that a little bit heartbreaking. I feel it heartbreaking there are people in this country that love curry as much as they do, but somehow don't feel enabled to go and cook it. And if you love to eat something, about 80% of you should be able to cook it. Listen, there's always going to be a percentage of folk that just are not good in the kitchen. Luckily, they are field marshals in the army, excellent accountants at the tax office, or upholsterers and haberdashers. Do you know what I mean? Cooking may not be your skill, but maybe even so, you enjoy the story of food, and finding out why things are the way they are might just help your appreciation of food. So I've re-kind of engineered the book to be much more about my kind of how I learnt to cook and what I think is, again, foundational food stories and recipes. So very basic things, you know. So there's not going to be a butter chicken in there, you know, because butter chicken is the next level. I want to give you, now don't get me wrong, my mum's chicken curry, simple though those words may be, takes you to levels of deliciousness you can scarcely imagine. A simple chicken curry on the bone, whole chicken butchered correctly in that pan with two handfuls of ingredients. It's the closest thing to heaven, you know. So don't for a minute think, because this is a kind of, you know, 101, this is the starter's guide, that this is going to be anything less than palate entertaining. It's going to set your palate off, but what it will do is it will offer you something that you're not going to be daunted by, you know, that you're not going to be overwhelmed by, certainly in the cooking, you know. And the hope is, you see, offer me your hand, let me hold your hand and let me take you through the streets of curry. I can show you something that will make you change your mind. Nathan, do you see what I did there? I took the song Streets of London, do you see? And I craftily, just on the spot, it wasn't planned, Just changed it and made it. Now, you might be thinking, oh, why are you not just writing one book and letting it go? Because again, I want this. I want to use technology and the internet and Patreon and the like to our best effect. And our best effect is, if in 3 or 4 weeks, you know, some of you want me to do this dish or that dish, I will do it. I can do it and include it in a chapter, you know? So in 101, we have a basic chicken curry, we'll have a basic dal, we'll have rice, we'll have a breads chapter. There will also be again, before you even start cooking, we're looking at spices, we're looking at larder, kind of larder. Who's got a larder? I say I've got a larder, I've just got a big cupboard. Well, I live in Glasgow in a 2-bedroom flat, I've saved for a larder. You know, stuff that you want in your cupboards, you know. So, for example, I've always got coconut milk, coconut cream, because it's invaluable. In fact, the other day we were doing cabbage. We were doing 4-green sarg. I normally do a 3-green sarg, but I was doing a kind of clear out of the fridge type dish. And there was coconut cream. It was missing something. I'd gone over the top with the coriander seeds at the beginning, and coriander seeds are great, but they're not the best flavouring in the world. It's just being lazy, so I tried something different. And then I put this coconut cream in, and it took it. Kathleen was over the moon with it. She took it, took a big Tupperware of it home. So things that you can have in your cupboard, because I think another thing, I don't know how you feel, Nathan, I mean, you're a very accomplished cook, very accomplished, but I think often people can be daunted at the range of ingredients with Indian food, and also, well, if I don't cook very often, you know, there's that whole balance, you know. I mean, of course, here we have commercial size bags of spices because, you know, when I'm doing the pop-ups or I'm doing this, that, or I'm catering, you know, I've got a 30th wedding to cater, I've got a 30th birthday to cater, I've got other bits and pieces to cater, so I always need my stuff around me. But yeah, there's a way of doing it where you're operating on the minimal amounts. Can I tell you the other idea? Oh, happened the other day with chickpeas. I forgot to mention earlier on. Was I did chickpeas and cheese on toast. I know, with a bit of a ras al. What's it called?
Ras al hanout.
Yes, hanout. Hanout. It was really delicious, actually. There we have it. Answers, questions, answers. What is food?
Love.
What is love?
Food.
What is food, love?
Life.
How deep is your love?